Okay, welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution, newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions of the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker shared. Welcome Susan from Susan A, a compulsive overeater from Toronto. And you'll have 30 minutes and the timer will be up.
Okay, I'm just going to set my watch. Hi, I'm Susan. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm feeling really grateful to be here. And I see some people that were here at my very first OA meeting almost 15 years ago. So lots of emotion coming up. As I said, I'm Susan. I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in the program, it'll be 15 years. This September, one day at a time. I don't speak for OA. This is only my story. And I'm going to be talking about how I used the 12 steps through a really difficult time in my life. I will let you know ahead of time, it does talk about caretaking and grief. So if this topic feels too tender or sensitive for you this evening, please take care of yourself if you need to step away or choose not to participate if it will activate you. I understand. But it's my hope that this will help share how the 12 steps can be applied while navigating a really unwanted, challenging time. I've used the framework, for other challenging things as well. In December of 2022, I'm so grateful that I was able to admit powerlessness and that my life had become unmanageable. And it wasn't because of food. The food had been down for years. It was a normal day, and my husband, my second husband, we'd just been married 2 years, went out to walk the dog like he did every morning, and he came home and had a seizure. And over the next 4 weeks, the doctors ruled out one possibility after another until we learned that he had terminal brain cancer. And I vividly remember being in that hospital room with an insane number of medical people around. He was given his prognosis, and Jeffrey was numb with shock. I was numb with shock, but my first call was to my sponsor, even before our kids, family, clergy. And what followed was a journey of loving him and caring for him and grieving him. And he, just to bring you up to date, he died a little over a year and a half ago. So I'll share first, I'll just take some time to qualify. I'll share my journey with food. Food became my emotional regulator long before I had language for it. As a child, I was a child in the 70s. I was born in the 60s, but really had my first memories in the 70s. I was taught that being quiet, a quiet good girl, was a good thing. Be stoic, don't argue, don't tell people your problems. But I had a lot of problems, especially as a teenager. I had hearing impairment, which was ignored. I didn't feel like I fit in. I was really rude. I would do a bunch of things that would get me sent to my room, and then I would sneak back down and eat a lot of food. I would take handfuls of whatever I could. I ate in my closet and I ate in other places, and the sneaking gave me a huge dopamine hit. It was never about hunger. The food gave me comfort, a sense of rebellion, and it helped me to survive some difficult years and experiences. It helped me manage feelings I wasn't allowed to express, and gave me a sense of safety I didn't otherwise have. Food was my friend, and it helped help me keep the secrets for a lot of stuff that I had done and that was done to me. And I couldn't tell my parents or anyone because I feared their anger, pity, and judgment. And as I got older, food became my solution to stress and fear and loneliness and uncertainty in my first marriage. And I moved to Toronto from Los Angeles. And I really felt lonely. I mean, the marriage from the beginning was, there were a lot of issues and flags in the marriage, and I learned to use food to regulate my emotions. And it worked until it didn't. And by the time I hit bottom, I was probably 35 pounds heavier than I am now. I had tried many pain ways. I was sort of a compulsive exerciser, kind of an exercise bulimic. And, in those days, like a large popcorn and Diet Coke was lunch, dinner, whatever. I kept gaining weight after the birth of my daughter, who is my second child. I was miserable inside, although everything appeared totally fine on the outside. And at the last pain weigh, I bought my food for the week, and it was mostly gone after 3 days. Willpower was definitely not working, and I was pretty miserable. I was very miserable. And so I came to OA because my mother had a friend who she thought worked for OA, but of course she was a fellow just like we are. And she arranged for us to talk to each other to help me get under control, which I have so many emotions about that, but that's a talk for another day. Anyways, she was my first sponsor and just so normally told her story and mentioned things like eating food out of the garbage, lying about where the food had gone, sneak eating. And she also called herself a compulsive overeater with a disease. And I did all those things, but I didn't realize I had a disease and I didn't know how to stop doing it. So that was really great. And I came to program in during it was a very tumultuous time. My first marriage was no longer sustainable. I was mentally and practically preparing to leave, but I couldn't also imagine staying. And this fellowship really helped me through meetings, 10 steps, writing countless outreach calls. And I've attended two or more meetings a week ever since. I sponsor, and the program has helped me rebuild so many aspects of my personality. Before I would say I was a bitch, pardon my language. I lied all the time. I was angry all the time. I woke up angry. I went to bed angry. And today my life is far from perfect, but I also wouldn't trade it for anything. Even the really hard stuff. So I'll tell you a little bit about what I'm going to be talking about. Although I am, this is part of the talk. Years later, after the marriage ended and there was time on my own, and I met someone and I completely fell head over heels with this person. We fell in love and we built a cherished life. And some of you knew me during these years. And then life shifted in a way that I never saw coming. I was full time in school doing a master's in a different related field. Life was really busy and complicated, and then the medical complications that we talked about happened, and nothing prepares you for that. And somehow, by the grace of God, through the diagnosis and all of the scary moments, I was able to stay abstinent, thank you, God. Emotionally and spiritually, there were some pretty slippery slopes there. But I was able to keep the food down, and that helped me. So that helped keep the channel to my higher power open. And that was incredibly important. So I will be telling you about how I worked through the steps. In the early days, I did continue my nightly review. Meditation was very difficult. I was afraid that if I sat still long enough, the emotions would just swallow me up. And my sponsor stayed gentle, gave me gentle reminders that God would hold me even in the difficult moments. that I was afraid to feel. And I remember being so scared to tell her that I wasn't, that I just couldn't meditate. Like I thought, oh my God, she's going to fire me and I can't handle being fired by my sponsor in this moment. And she was so gentle and wonderful during this, and it was a lot. I was a lot then, and I had an inner circle that just absolutely held me up. So Jeffrey lived for 22 months, and he died on October 18th, 2024. And it wasn't a surprise, but it completely derailed me. Not only did my identity as a wife and caregiver vanish in one moment, I was now in an unwanted role of a widow at age 56. And this is the thing, right? Like, this is a pretty big one, like an unwanted situation. But there have been other unwanted situations since. Some of you may have gone through unwanted situations, and I hope that, I'm going to be sharing how I use the steps to handle this horrible situation that I did not want. Step one, I had to admit I was powerless over my grief. Grief made one thing very clear. I was powerless over when it shows up, and I still am. Powerless how long it stays, powerless how inconvenient it is, powerless over how other people grieve. It hits me at weird times and at times that I want to feel something I don't. And I would sometimes say I'm doing great when I wasn't, and I felt lost. There was no roadmap. There were a lot of, I had this like mental list. I don't know how I made it. I mean, it was just like it's based on society and media and cultural upbringing, but there was like an unwritten list of what widows should do and what widows shouldn't do. And that caused me a lot of self-judgment and a lot of just feeling absolutely stuck and lost. Admitting the powerlessness over grief did not make the grief go away. God did not take that, nor should God have taken that. But it allowed me to stop fighting it. So step two, hope. Hope really matters. Even in grief, I never felt abandoned by my higher power. Even though I tried to ignore my higher power, I turned my back on God sometimes. But every time I turned back around, I leaned in just even a little bit. God was waiting for me there with open arms and a warm, steady presence. I felt supported, but differently than before. My meditation practice shifted. It was very hard in the early days of grief to sit still and pray or meditate. I was so engulfed with sadness and fear, and I found God in movement. And I just want to say that over that was okay for me. Like, my meditation practice had to change because I had changed. Walking with my dog on trails and noticing tiny beauty moments in beauty really helped. And slowing down enough to notice the changes that happen, like the leaves falling off the trees, the buds forming, the first tulips, like all of those things, even a sunrise and a sunset, were so important. And I also had to have some angry conversations with God, but that's part of a relationship. I can't just be, for me, with my higher power, if I want a relationship, I have to let God know what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. And if I need something from my higher power, and if I'm mad at God, I have to be able to let God know that. If I was going to keep moving through this unknown reality, my higher power needed to hear the truth about how I felt. And hope did not feel like sunshine. It wasn't, definitely wasn't that. But it felt like quiet reassurance that I was not alone and that I would not be alone with whatever happened. And I really felt most connected to God in nature while walking my dog, which a program friend pointed out that dog is God spelled backwards. Step three, turning it over. The biggest thing sorry, I have a timer on my watch, so I'm just looking down. I'm not checking messages. The biggest thing I had to keep turning over after Jeffrey died was my relationship with my stepchildren. So by the time Jeff and I got married, he had three full-on adult independent children. And I was always dad's wife. Like, there was nothing maternal about our relationship. It was very loving and lovely. But I didn't have a relationship with them separate to him. And they all lived out of town, and it was very weird. Like, this new this it was just very weird. I was had very overwhelming feelings about what our connection would look like. I got into the what if, what if, what if so often, and I wrote so many step tens about trying to manage outcomes, trying to look good, trying to control the narrative. And it was all, it went down to like, the bottom line thing is, are they going to like me still? And do they like me enough to keep me in their life? And when I finally surrendered that I stopped, having to manage and think, should I say this? Should I do that? Should I do this? Should I do that? And finally accept that, turn it over to God and give it to God and then listen. God had it. God had them. God had me. They had their higher power too. And, I can't say that we have a relationship today beyond my wildest dreams. It is not that. I'm always the one that calls them. And I will have to do that if I want to know what's going on in their life. But they are loving and lovely, and we celebrate birthdays and some holidays together. So, yeah, I am, it's different than what I expected. Not better, not worse, just different. So, steps four and five, inventory work and grief. So what I noticed, when I noticed that I was holding resentments towards Jeffrey, which felt shocking and immoral and uncomfortable and sticky and icky because I didn't want to be resenting my husband who was no longer living. That felt, a huge, you shouldn't be thinking badly about someone who's died. Like, that felt like all shades of wrong to me. But I had wrote an inventory on that. And then I wrote an inventory on the resentments I had. And, it was more just around the way he approached his treatment, which was very by the books, very what the doctors were saying, nothing experimental, nothing, and he didn't follow my script. That's basically what it was in his treatment. And the inventory helped me release a lot of anger that I didn't know was still inside me. I've written many inventories regarding Jeffrey's, some of his family members, his brothers, and I'd start writing, angry, hurt with those emotions leading. And I would almost always finish with like a greater understanding and perspective. And it helped me so much to see my part. That is really where my healing has been. Fear was my constant visitor. But in every fear inventory seemed to bring me back to the same truth, is that God is a steady presence in my life. Again and again, I was reminded, you're going to be okay. You're not doing this alone. And yeah, like I became aware that, and it's interesting because like in some of the really big things that were like far too big for me to handle, I had no problem turning it over. But some of the other things were really hard to turn over. So I was gently reminded again, sometimes not so gently, that program is not a buffet where you can be like, okay, I'll turn it over here, but not this, here, but not that. So it's a work in progress. Like I'm always a work in progress. I'm just in recovery one day at a time. So some days are better than others. Step six and seven, my parts, grief certainly does not exempt me from my character defects. In many ways, it brought them out. But being a grieving person in recovery is different than the experience that others who are not in recovery might have. I did attend some grief groups, and I heard about people handling their grief in all sorts of ways that are not okay in my wheelhouse, and I don't have to name them. You can probably imagine. They would say, "Oh, you're grieving, it's normal," or, "Oh, don't be so hard on yourself," or, "Oh, this, oh, that." But I'm still someone in recovery. I can't sit in resentment, right? Like I can't. I have to turn it over. I have to see what the problem is. I can't rage. Or if I rage for a moment, I need, if I've harmed someone in a rage, I need to make amends, right? I have a framework, and my framework is different than people that are not in recovery. And that's most people in my world are not in recovery, and I had to accept that. And I still needed to look at my defects. So some of the ones that came up over and over were a lot of selfishness. I wanted special treatment. I wanted people to make things easy for me. And that goes with all the paperwork that goes with settling an estate for someone that's died. I wanted things my way. I also experienced selfishness a lot when people were, people calling me, "How are you?" Da, 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 da. And I would forget to ask about how they are. So that was very selfish of me. Self-seeking, I certainly played the victim. I mean, for I would say not so much today, but for a while, my being a widow was my leading identity. I mean, and I, boy, did I feel that void. I filled the void with Amazon shopping. I filled the void with judging my stepchildren to comfort my own pain. I saw dishonesty creating narratives about what other people thought of me, what they would think of me if I did this, what they would think of me if I did that, and what they actually thought of me. And fear showed up a lot in the opinions and judgment and exposure. Fear of people, their opinions of me, their judgment of me feeling exposed for grieving incorrectly, and all of the practical realities that come with loss. I mean, I had a lot of fear for my future, fear. I had financial fear. I had just like what was actually going to happen to me? Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, it's just everything was really crazy for a while. Step six and seven helped me separate grief from my character defects. And this is really important because grief is not a character defect. But what I do with grief can help bring me back to self-will. So I had to be very careful
It's
with
8
how
minutes left.
I, okay, thank you, with how I handle the grief. So one of the best things that I learned to do was just sit quietly with God and just imagine that my hands were out and my higher power was sitting in front of me, like both of our legs were crossed, holding my hands, and we were just sitting with it together. And in that way, I really felt my higher power held my grief. Steps eight and nine, repair. Because of my daily 10 steps, I didn't have many direct amends to make. Most of them were to myself and to my relationship with my higher power. My amends were really internal, reconnecting with God when I had pulled away, trusting rather than controlling, living life, like giving myself permission to live life in the way that I know Jeffrey would want me to live, and trusting the future rather than trying to orchestrate it, and trusting that I am exactly where I need to be right now. Steps 10, 11, and 12. My nightly reviews, especially in the early days, were very raw and emotional. I am beyond grateful to my sponsor, my nightly review buddy, who lived through this with me. Today, my connection with my higher power is really strong, but I still can get blocked. I mean, things continue to come up. And there were times that I did the bare minimum. And during those times, I really felt carried by this program. I did pause sponsoring during, like, when Jeffrey was sick. Today, I am sponsoring again. And service brings me back to purpose, connection, and hope. This program really saved me, not by taking away the grief. It couldn't do that, but it helped me by giving me a structure to live with. Like, knowing that I had the 12 steps, no emotion was too much. Like, no problem was too much. And I would like get, I definitely had moments where I was freaking out, panicking, crying, like everything. But, it would always come back to, okay, give this to God, whether it was a sponsor, a fellow, or if the grace of God just came over me. It was, I always had a structure. It's like a plan, to help me with other challenges. And right now I'm in a place of making some pretty big work changes, and I'm noticing some surprisingly codependent actions coming up, in part with one of my children who's in the middle of a breakup with their partner. And yeah, I get anxious and scared and angry and pissed off that I'm having to deal with this on my own. I have a lot of, I definitely go back into that victim mode sometimes. But then I pause, and I invite God in. And, I know that frantic feeling, and that frantic feeling is not God. So as soon as I notice it, the pause, invite God in, I write, call a fellow, I breathe again, and then I'm ready to take direction and listen to God and to really let God in. When people say to me, "Oh, you're so strong," it's really not a helpful comment, because I may have looked strong on the outside, but on the inside I felt really fragile. But I think what made me appear strong on the outside and be getting stronger every day are the 12 steps. I've been able to stay present for my children, my stepchildren, my mother-in-law's, Jeffrey's mom, and my parents. I'm building a new career, oddly enough, specializing in grief, which was my interest before he got sick. So that's kind of a God shot too. Continuing to recover a day at a time, and continuing to grieve a day at a time. And I'm continuing to trust one moment at a time, and continuing to keep asking for God's will, God's guidance, and everything that comes up. And yes, I forget. I have to do that many, many times a day. And I accept that I forget sometimes, and I can still get caught in self-will. I don't blame myself. It's just who I am. I am Susan, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you so much for letting me share.
Okay, we'll just stop the recording.